when you play with a smile on your lips, you feel a little bit tired.
Charlotte Soccer Show. Hey, Danny. It's a Wednesday evening here in the QC, and there's a important match on Friday nights. We figured we would hang out tonight to discuss the must-win match at the Fortress. It's come down to this, Danny Brams. How do you feel about this match on Friday night? We can discuss Sunday's action, but mostly we want to look ahead to see Charlotte FC and Orlando on Friday play for the end of the season.
I mean, why we're going forward, John. We are looking forward. We're not looking back, because I don't want to look back too much at that previous match, because it was really depressing. It was not a fun watch. It was back to the old boring Charlotte tactics that we kind of have been so vocally against. It is now match day minus two in a must-win situation, round one of the playoffs, Charlotte versus Orlando game two, and it's a win or go home situation at the Fortress for Charlotte FC. If we don't win this match on Friday, the first ever home playoff match in club history, we out. There ain't going to be another one for quite a while. So, let me just say, before you respond to that, my cat is really going nuts right now. So you're going to hear a lot of meowing in the background until he decides to pipe down. So shout out to Crackers, who's making a off-screen guest appearance on the episode today.
Welcome to the show, and welcome to what you called a must-win week here. For me, Danny, it's pretty simple. Like the match is on Friday night. I think you can tell there's just maybe not as much buzz as there should be because of the flat performance on Sunday. I think there's been a lot of distraction off the field after Pep Bial's red card on Sunday. I think there's a lot of distraction off the field before this Sunday match as well, when Dean Smith criticized the MLS playoff format heading into it, and then quite frankly managed like he didn't know what the format was on Sunday night too. So there's a lot of storylines right now for this club heading into its match on Friday night. And one of those, I mentioned the red card, Pep Bial won't be on the pitch, Danny. So from that point of view, it feels like Charlotte FC is not exactly where they want to be, not just because they lost, right? Because a couple other things have added up to make Friday night's match maybe a little bit more difficult than it should be.
We were so high on Pep Bial, John, going into the game one, thought he could be a difference maker, all the contributions he had made, and he really didn't play that well, really was kind of an invisible man in game one. And then, you know, I don't really like the red card that he got. I think the red card was a little rough, a little harsh. We've heard Dean Smith spoke about it at length today in the press conference. You know, he was joking about it. He talked about the appeal that was denied. He talked about how he still doesn't think it's a red. He thinks it's BS. But ultimately, you got to do what you got to do. You got to, as you like to say, Johnny, dance with the one that brung you. You got to play it as it is. You got to live in reality. And the fact of the matter, and the matter of the fact is, that Pep Bial won't be there. So we got to come up with something different for this must-win match. We got to find a way. I think those circumstances hurt us because the lineup had been looking so good. But against Orlando, Pep Bial hasn't really done much. So we got to figure out Orlando. We got to crack this nut, because in the last seven matches Charlotte FC has played, they have four wins, one draw, and two losses, and both of the losses are to Orlando City. So, like, that's kind of shocking when you consider one of the teams that mix is Miami, the best team in the league.
It doesn't bother me as much, considering both matches were on the road, and both – in both matches, I think you saw home field and MLS really, really come to fruition there. I think Orlando is very, very good at home, and I think it's a team that's been playing really well towards the end of the season. And really, maybe their run of good form started when they beat Charlotte FC on a midweek just a few months ago. So from that point of view, it doesn't bother me. I think what bothers me is looking at Friday's match and wondering if Charlotte FC is going to go for it, because, you know, I've got a bad taste in my mouth after Sunday, thinking about Friday, because you've got to get it right in these scenarios, Danny. You have to make sure that you've got players on the pitch that are going to get you a result. And playing for a draw on the road, which is what it felt like, probably not the best move. You got to make sure you're not playing for a draw at home. And yeah, we could get into tactics talk, but you know, it's not time to talk tactics, I think, two nights before the biggest game of the season. At this point, it's like everybody's sitting down at the dinner table waiting to eat, and that meal better come out of the oven right now.
And it's more about attitude than tactics at this point, right? Dean Smith talked a big game on the pregame press conference before Sunday's match. He talked about, we're not going to, you know, we've practiced penalties, but we're not playing for penalties. We're going to go try to win the match in 90 minutes. He was very adamant about that. And then did he lie to us? Was Dean Smith lying to the fans, or did he lose his sort of nerve in the end and decide he couldn't do it? Because the way that the team played in game one was ultra defensive, like you said, playing to get to PKs, playing for a draw, just like trying to sneak a point on the road, as it were, instead of just trying to go out and be a club that could win a match. And I really wish that, you know, and it's not hindsight. I don't think this is hindsight being 2020. I don't think this is us like, oh, it didn't work, so we're criticizing it. We were criticizing it in real time in the moment. Like within 20, 30 minutes of that match, it was kind of a situation where you and I were looking at each other. We took it back to basics. We went to watch the match at EPR, our ancestral home of the Charlotte Soccer Show, if you will. And it was a nice night there. The $5 Guinnesses were flowing. It was great. But it didn't take long for us both to be like, what the fuck are we watching right now? Because the team just did not look like they were up for the fight.
Torres on the right-hand side was a problem for sure. And he dominated the match. And he gave Tim Ream, who was on an island, a lot of trouble in that scenario. And I don't think that's a criticism of Tim Ream. I just think that's the way the game played out. There was a lot of space there, and Ream in the left back position just happened to have the toughest matchup of the evening. And he's somebody that is going to be active on Friday night. Is somebody that's going to try to get the win for Orlando and get them back to the Sunshine State with a ticket to the next round, because right now it feels like Orlando is really difficult to beat, and it would be a shock if Charlotte doesn't win a match in this three-game series, and it would be quite a disappointment. And that's where we are when you think about how important this match is, Danny, on Friday night. You've got two scenarios here. You've got a win, and you're going down to Orlando for game three. And I think a loss there feels different than a loss at home, or you lose and the season's over. How do you react to either of those outcomes, Danny?
I mean, if the season's over, I'll be thankful that we had a really fun season and that Dino's at the wheel and that we experienced everything, the best season in club history and the short 3-year club history of this year of this club. But I will feel a little bit of sort of a, we left something on the table. I think we should have expected to win this series against Orlando. So I don't feel that we can be happy with going out in the first round per se. I'd be sort of happy for the entire course of the season. If we win, it's game on. If we win, it's all hands on deck. And how can we then change the approach to a game three, a new must win match that would be facing down the barrel of right again in Orlando in a game three scenario. So I think it's nothing bad. Like either result, I'll find the silver lining, you know, if you will, but a win puts me, is kind of, you know, the meme of the guy, like the video game player who's like leaning back in the chair with the controller, then they lean forward with the controller, you know, like that. I'm going to be like on the edge of my seat if they win and get the game three going. If they lose and the season's over, you know, it'll be, you know, a salute to a job well done, but I'll definitely feel as if should have done more.
It feels good to play in a match that has this type of circumstance, right? Where everything is on the line. So many matches throughout the MLS season feel like they're just kind of happening, and the result is sure meaningful because the table and the campaign will ultimately add up to the end of the season, but you rarely get moments like this. And that's why, by the way, people love cup competition, is because cup competition takes moments like this, a knockout match, and makes it happen more regularly throughout the season. And first of all, that's another reason why I think a League's Cup drawn out throughout the entirety of the year and cup matches woven throughout the schedule with the US Open Cup as well makes the season better. I think when we look back on this MLS season, we're going to feel like we maybe cheated a little bit. Not much of a cup run for Charlotte FC at all. And I think that these types of matches, Charlotte FC has not had a lot of them under Dean Smith. This is a big time moment for the manager. This is a manager that, quite frankly, looks second best on Sunday. We've been singing Dean Smith's phrases, but Orlando's manager, Danny, he's somebody that's been at the helm there for a long time and is probably one of the more respected managers in MLS.
Yeah, I mean, they call him Poppy, Oscar Pereja, and I have some Orlando fan friends that they certainly have their ups and downs with Poppy through the years. He's known for, trying to win every match 1-0 himself, and he tends to be chastised at times for being a little too conservative, but he pulled all the strings. And once again, this is what we hate. I know you hate this, John, and I'm not a fan of it at all either, but when we see a team that is beating us, we're Charlotte FC losing or trailing in a match, and it's the 50-60 between the 50 and 60 minute mark, and the team that's winning against us makes the first substitution, and it's attacking subs. Like, Orlando was winning and they brought in attacking subs. They were going for it. Facundo Torres was finding all the joy he wanted in the whole damn world. As you mentioned,
it was Duncan McGuire that came on.
And then Duncan McGuire comes on to add more. That's what I'm saying. It's like they weren't trying to protect a 1-0 lead in that scenario. They were trying to kill off the game. And ultimately they did, right? So, I mean, it was an aggressive, you could even say out of character aggressive game plan from Oscar Pereja, and it paid off and it did well. They did the right thing at home, and Dean's got to be able to match that for sure.
So no Pep Bial on Friday night. Karol Swiderski, he starts at the number 9 position on Sunday. Where does he start on Friday night with Pep Bial on the bench? Is there a chance that he moves out to the wing and Patrick Ajimong starts up top at the number 9 position?
I mean, we've seen that chatter already in the Charlotte FC social world. We've seen people. I've seen tweets about that. Caleb Adams put out a big thread that you pointed my direction with a multi-post thread about how that would be a great idea. And then everybody that responded was just like, yeah, of course we need to do that.
That's the right move. It's good analysis. It feels like the right move. To slot Karol Swiderski on the right there and have Patrick Ajimong come in at the 9. What you do in that scenario is you kind of limit your options at that number 9 position coming off the bench, right? Who would be that player that comes on? But if you don't start Vargas can come on at either wing position, and you ultimately ask Patrick Ajimong to go 90 minutes. Here's the key too to this match is, I believe is it November 1st? Yes, November 1st.
Yes. The All Saints Day.
Correct.
Shout out to the Saints.
The third game in this series, if Charlotte FC is to get a result on Friday, is a week later. Right. So a full 90 means absolutely nothing in this match. You should be expected to go the full 90 in this match if you're starting this match because you've got 7 days of rest. Despite playing Sunday, you can do 2 games in 6 days, in 5 days.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be worried about fatigue or anything like that. It's all hands on deck. I mean, it's win or go home, like we said. So if we're looking at Dean Smith's press conference comments today to try to get a gauge of what might happen, he didn't seem too keen on the idea of playing Karol and Pat together. I don't know why he doesn't love it as much as you and I and others, like we said, Caleb and others like the idea. But he says his quote was, Karol and Pat on the pitch together doesn't bring out the best in what we do, or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing there, but he said
right because I think what they do is they put this clause in Karol Swiderski's contract that says must start at the number 9, does right. not and refuses to play on the win. I believe that's what Charlotte FC does when they created that contract for Karol Swiderski.
But the thing is, like, Pep is on paper lining up as a winger, you know, in that formation. But he's really given the freedom to go anywhere, and he's been playing centrally. Even when I called, when I said Pep was a winger to Dean at the pre-match one presser, he was like, "Well, yeah, he's a winger." This is what Dean said. He said he's a winger on paper, but he's actually playing. He's spending more time centrally, even lined up as a winger. So Karol can do that same thing, and Karol can play a false nine.
This is why, Danny. I'm like, what are we talking about here? I mean, I think Karol Swiderski was at his best for Charlotte FC and has been at his best for Charlotte FC when he's cutting in off the right onto his left foot and right. He's stepping into shots. And it's a good place for him to be. And he can whip balls into the left corner. That's where he loves to be. And he can drift inside. It's the perfect position. Hopefully Dean Smith is playing coy here. You know, one thing we know is that he does not give away any tips or secrets for his lineups. No. In those press conferences, he might be doing a little bit of gamesmanship here and not letting Orlando think that, yeah, Karol Swiderski and Patrick Ajimang are going to play together. But either way, I mean, it just seems like a total no-brainer. And I just don't understand why Karol Swiderski wouldn't be able to play that position. Like, it's what strikers do. Let me make it a comparison. Is, you know, Richarlison is somebody that came in today for Tottenham and played the left wing.
Richie.
And he did the job on the left wing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what sometimes you have to do when you're a striker and there's another striker on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why Charleston had to play left wing is because Solanke was playing the number nine position. Sorry, buddy. Like, if you want to play, there's room on the left for you there, and go have at it. And I think that this is what did Karol Swiderski do on Sunday, Danny?
Nothing.
He did nothing.
Karol was horrible. Karol was probably one of the worst player on the pitch. You'd say, or at least the most disappointing. I'd love – we could poll the people who are viewing right now. Anyone – thanks to everyone who's watching the show live. And if you're listening back later on audio or watching back later on YouTube, just shout your own answer into the ether. But I would love to hear from some of the audience about, like, who they thought the worst player in game one was. I would nominate Karol Swiderski because he certainly was the most disappointed. That was a guy that we – that was a moment, that was a situation where we needed our DP number nine to grab that game by the scruff of the neck and make something happen. Didn't make it happen. He failed. And to me, that was,
I think he would have seen more of the ball if he was playing on the wing. Like if Ajimang was the starter at the number nine position on the road this past Sunday and Swiderski had freedom to roam and was basically playing where Brant Bronico plays.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the 4-4-2, you took Brant off the pitch and you put Karol Swiderski in there because it's the playoffs and you need your best players on the pitch to score goals in the playoffs, right? And even though Brant Bronico has done a fantastic job for the club and plays this false number nine position and works his tail off and presses from that 4-4-2 tip of the spear, if you will, if you put Karol Swiderski in that position, then all of a sudden you've put a goal scorer there that can also press. And yeah, and you give up a little bit of defensive cover in the midfield with Brant because you know he can track back, but you lost anyway.
Right. And goal margin means absolutely nothing. So it doesn't matter if you lose 1-0, 2-0, or 5-0, or 6-0. Dean pointed that out himself. I don't know. I want to see it. You want to see it. I think most of the fans that are watching this and listening to this want to see it. I just don't think that Dean's going to be the one to do it. He when they asked him at the conference today, you know, who do you see coming in for Pep? Dean's answer was Tavares, Vargas, Jamie Patterson, you know? So, and then sure, it would be nice.
You know what? You know what? Jamie Patterson, Danny Rams, let's just give him a chance here. Let's throw him out there. Let's let him earn that $440,000 that he's making this year for.
The salary data we looked at this week, you and I had a little side text chain going about, man, this Jamie Patterson guy, it must be nice to just be able to come in and get a big payday from your buddy, Dean Smith, when you have, you know, I called it a no-show job, you know, kind of, but, you know, I don't, I like Jamie Patterson. He's a good guy, but if Dino's at the wheel, as we love to say, it's time to, like, this is where Dino could really turn the whole thing from a boondoggle into a masterstroke. If Jamie Patterson was to come in and be the difference maker in this must-win match, who wouldn't love to see it?
Let me correct myself. It's actually $534,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Of guaranteed money that Jamie Patterson is making.
Must be nice, man. Must be nice.
Well, hey, Brandon, what's going on? I appreciate you watching. I agree with that. And like when I first read it, let's not give Patterson the start in a do or die game. Like I read that as satire. Like, yeah, no shit. So like, but if Dean is seriously considering this and Patterson gets the start and plays well, it will be one of the biggest masterstrokes I've ever seen. You know,
he's at the wheel, baby. He's at the wheel. You know, what can I say?
It really would be, but I don't expect it to happen. I don't expect him. I would be surprised if he makes the squad.
I think Vargas is probably, if we take the whole Patrick and Carroll together out of the mix, then I think Vargas is probably the most likely answer. Dean has had a lot of praise for Vargas in recent weeks about adapting his game and responding to coaching. Dean has been very high on praising Vargas's response to coaching. He talks about the curly finger, you know, step into my office, and how he spent a lot of time looking at film breakdowns with Kerwin and showing him, you know, chances he had missed and things like that. So I kind of feel like it, call me crazy, John. I think it might be a bit of a rope-a-dope. I think the Swiderski to the wing thing has some legs, even though Dean didn't give us a whole lot of reason to believe it. It just feels like the best move for the situation. For the situation, I think it's the best move, because I just think Vargas is better coming off the bench. There's been all this chatter about, you know, oh, Patrick's better coming in off the bench because he's going up against tired center backs. Well, there's no tired center backs when you have 30% possession and every time the ball's in their attacking zone, it's their defenders just passing it back and forth to each other, and we never actually have any runs at the center backs. So I thought Swiderski really, not necessarily fully his fault, the whole team, I'll blame the collective for this, but Swiderski did nothing whatsoever to tire out those center backs. And ultimately, in a do or die must win match, I think the time to put them together and see and make magic happen is now.
Forget about Swiderski on the wing. What about Swiderski on the bench? What about Patrick Ostermang at the number nine to start, Kerwin Vargas on the left wing and Leal Abada on the right wing? We've seen that work before.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it goes back to what I was saying. You can't bring someone in against tired center backs when you're not actually tiring the center backs out. I think a lot of us would have really loved to see Patrick start that game one. It would have been a very bold move to bench Swiderski for game one, but it wouldn't have been unheard of. And the way that it all played out, this is a hindsight. I had said earlier, I had a take that was not hindsight. I will offer up a hindsight take now, which is that yes, Patrick should have started that game because we saw how it worked. And if Dean really has the freaking, if he can put his, you know, throw it all out on the table there and, you know, summon all his guts from deep down inside, I almost use a different word, but yeah, his chutzpah, like he could just say, screw it. Patrick Ostermang is my best chance to make Jansen and Schlegel work harder, and I'm going to do it. Because those guys, the Orlando center backs, we made Orlando's defense look like our defense because we gave them absolutely nothing to worry about whatsoever. And again, Orlando was able to just completely dictate, put control, possession, all of it. And it was really frustrating to watch. It was ugly for us.
One thing that could be interesting is this kind of this mental game that's being played around the three-game series, Danny, which is, let's be real, the first game of a three-game series is kind of awkward. The home team feels like they should win, and a lot of times it does. But there's really the urgency not necessarily created, not there. It doesn't feel like a cup tie.
Right.
I think that we're going to have to play this game now in Charlotte Friday night, mentally, it is that for Charlotte. It is a knockout match. Interestingly enough, though, it is not for Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
How does that change the way that you think about this match? Because Orlando's coming in here knowing that, you know what, there is a third game in this series, and as nice as it would be to nick one and get out of Charlotte with a win, we might be, you said that the manager is pragmatic. It might be in our best interest to, maybe just kind of play for a draw, to see if we can get into PKs and potentially win there, that would be heartbreak. And I think it would be a poor game too to watch if it ends in PKs. Could you imagine a 0-0?
I could have definitely imagined it. I do think that Orlando is playing with fire if they try to do that. I think they're professional enough that they know that they don't necessarily want to risk coming back home and then and all having to play a do or die back at home. Although it is a nice safety blanket and it does allow them a chance. I think they're kind of more likely to go for it in that situation because they know they really have nothing to lose. They know that they can come out and try to steal one on the road. And if it doesn't matter, they have 180 minutes of recent evidence that shows that Charlotte FC is pretty easy for them to handle on their own home turf. So they almost, I could see it because of what I know about Oscar Pereja. I could definitely see it, but I don't think they should do that. And I hope they won't, because I really would just love to see an open soccer match. You know, I don't care. I don't care if it's 3-3 and goes to PKs, you know, depending on how those three goals are scored. But as 0-0 to PKs, it's going to be a very, very boring night at Bank of America Stadium. And I really would hate to see that.
I think Orlando might be coming in to do just that. I think they want to kind of take the air out of the ball. I think they're going to want to quiet the crowd. And I think that they're going to not want to play this game wide open. I just don't think Orlando is going to want to play an open game here. And if they came in here and all of a sudden you notice the game is slowed down, that it's really a slog, just remember that's might be intentional from Orlando's side.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain like that phrase you use, take the air out of the ball. It's really going to make me mad, and I'm going to start screaming a bunch of obscenities, I think, if we start to see it. If the first 30 minutes of this match look like the first 30 minutes of game one, I'm going to be pretty pissed. But I just feel like it's really on us to take that away from them. And it's really on Dean Smith. It's really on the players to have a lot better, a more positive, more joyful attitude. You know, we talked earlier about how Ream was having all he could handle against Facundo Torres. And I agree with you, John. I think he did hold up his own. I don't think Ream was necessarily a problem. I don't think he played bad. But he did have – I'd have to look it up. But at least for – at one point, he had the most touches of anyone on Charlotte FC on the field. And that's not winning soccer. That's not a slight on Ream whatsoever. But you're not going to win a match if Tim Ream has the most touches on your team. It's just if any, you know, third center half slash, you know, pseudo left back is the guy that has the most touches, that's not going to be good for any team. So I want to see a more concerted effort to take the ball away from Torres and not allow him to operate with such impunity as he was able to do in game one. And I want to see our team passing the ball back and forth to each other the same way that we saw Orlando just passing it to each other for fun. Because Charlotte, there was a goal, there was a sequence. I think their first goal came at the end of like a 20 plus pass sequence, and just a lot of failure for Charlotte to have any type of control. And they've got to be able to control this match. Even if it is a low scoring match, I'm fine with that. As long as Charlotte FC is like the ones that are dictating the tempo and the terms.
You've got to dictate the tempo at your home place. And Charlotte FC has done that. This team's been very good at home to finish out the season. And I expect that to continue on Friday. Let's get into some official predictions, Danny. Let's talk about how you think this match ends on Friday. And anything else, anything specific about the match that I think that you could foresee would be interesting. I said in the first episode that I thought that one of the games in this three-game series would go to PKs. Yeah. So we didn't see it in game one. Could it happen on Friday night? Absolutely, it could. I think if it does go to PKs, it is, woof, are you going to be able to look? Are you going to be able to keep both eyes open?
If it goes to PKs, I really hope it's in the supporter's end and not on the opposite, because I want to see those PKs coming at me, not like staring, trying to stare down at the other end of the pitch and see what happens. I think with a big-ass crowd, I think with the upper bowl, you know, filling in and filling up, and I'm not sure exactly how many sections up there are going to be open, but hopefully as many as possible, I think that the crowd can carry the day. I really do think that Charlotte FC's home field advantage is a real thing, and it's going to be us to sort of push the team to new heights. I think Dino hopefully learned his lesson a little bit, and he also knows as much as we would like to think he would have seen this for game one. Now it's like your back is truly against the wall. It is win or go home. So you can't really afford to come out and play passive and play tight the way that Charlotte FC did in that first match. So I think the message has to be go for broke from the very beginning. The one thing Dean said in his post game on Sunday was that he said, I went in and told the lads at halftime that it doesn't look like you're having very much fun out there. So let's just recapture the fun. You know, winning soccer, aggressive, proactive soccer is fun. And I agree. It did not look like the lads were having much fun on the pitch on Sunday night. So if I'm not saying just go out there and don't care if you win or lose, just have fun. It's not that type of message. But the message is like play with joy, play with the fun, play with the joie de vivre, the spirit of what it takes to go out there and really enjoy your soccer. You know, you can see the subtle difference that I'm saying right there, right?
Yes, play with a smile on your lips. I think that's what the club needs to do on Friday night for sure.
Do we bring Yere back in? Is Ream too slow to handle these guys? Is it Yere season or what?
No, I think Tim Ream and his experience is really, really important in this match for sure.
Agreed.
And I think Yere coming in as a substitute to kind of see things out is a really good idea. Not necessarily for Ream, but potentially for somebody else to create kind of a back five scenario in the back there.
What did you think? Because I said this was a brief discussion we had during the game, is the midfield was really not the midfield was by far the problem, right, against Orlando in game one. Urso was not great. Bronico was not great. And Westwood was not great, really. And Westwood kind of had that sort of like look on his face, like he seemed like he was nervous, like, and playing squeaky bum. What do you think of this idea that I put out there that, like, you can't be afraid to, like, at some point you might have to sub Westwood out. Like, I know he's our captain and he's our guy, but if he's playing bad, does he deserve to be unsubbable if he's not playing well and if the team needs more attacking punch?
I'm going to answer this in a nuanced way. No, you don't take him off. You just move him forward.
Okay.
Like, you take somebody else off and you just send him up forward. I think – If Charlotte FC is pushing for a goal in this match, Danny, you can't take him off the pitch. You just can't do it.
He's somebody that is
at the end of the day, we don't talk enough. I try to talk enough about scoring and assisting and how you can talk about so many things on the pitch, work rate. You can talk about all of those things, but if you're not assisting or scoring goals, then you're not necessarily adding as much to the team that someone that is doing that. It's certain positions, especially right from a creative midfielder point of view, from somebody that's going to be on the end of set pieces, like that role is to contribute to goals, and you need somebody that can do that. Patrick Ajimang led the team with goals and assists this season combined. He led the team in goals. He led the team in both categories combined. But to me, that's just a clear sign that he needs to be on the pitch in any way, shape, or form. If it's the 65th minute and Patrick Ajimang isn't on the pitch, I might not be in the stadium.
Yeah, the subs took way too long to come in, for sure. We mentioned that off the top. And again, like, people say, oh, you want to go down with your best players on the pitch. If you're going to go down, you want to go down fighting. And, like, Karol Swiderski may make more money, and he may do have better per 90 stats. You know, we've seen that debate. But, like, Ajimang has the most goal contributions on the team, especially if you add in the secondary assists. So Ajimang makes things happen. The other thing, like, again, like, it's funny to think of, I don't want to go too far back, but we talked a few minutes ago about, you know, should Patrick have started this game over Swiderski? He probably should have, if your tactics were going to be to play defensive and passive and play for the draw, because that's the guy that you want. If you're just going to be hoofing long balls up to a forward and asking him to hold up play and start things on his own like that, Patrick's way better at that mode of play than Swiderski. So I think I don't necessarily want to see that tactic as a whole deployed here in game two in a must-win match. I want to see the team playing very front foot, but you can still do that with Ajimang too. And I think you got to go down. If you're going down swinging, put them both on the pitch together. And just, I know Dean said today that, you know, that doesn't bring out the best of what we do, but what we do against Orlando has not been working. So it's time to try something different.
I've got a 2-2 draw on Friday night. I think it's going to be an exciting match. I think Charlotte FC is going to score first, and I think it's gonna make Orlando have to go for it and have to try to equalize. And I think they pull it off. I think we can see a 2-2 absolutely thrilling match. And the reason why I'm going to predict a draw, because I think that we're going to see PKs at some point. I just think it's in our future. I hope it's not. I hope it's a 1-0 Charlotte win. I hope it's a 2-0, a 3-0. But ultimately, I think Charlotte FC will get a couple goals against this Orlando side at home. I think that this club is primed and ready to do that in front of the crowd. I'm just concerned about Orlando's ability to flip the switch and say, wait a minute, let's score a couple goals to tie them. And I expect Orlando to put up a fight. I think what we saw on Sunday was a team that's very good and isn't going to roll over.
Yeah, I was really impressed. A guy I had not seen a ton of this year, but their center forward, Ramiro Enrique, was really nice. He came within a hair's breadth of scoring early. He almost got the very first goal. He was wide open, and he curled it just outside the post. Had another should-have-been goal where Kalina made an insane save. So Orlando really could have put it on Charlotte. That could have been a 4-0. It's tough to imagine us keeping them off the score sheet, even at home, even with our great defense. So I like the 2-2 prediction. I like the PKs. Can I crib off your homework there, Johnny? Can I just steal your prediction and say I'm going to also predict the same damn thing, 2-2? Like, we don't have to be different, right? We can predict the same thing, right?
Yeah.
You two sounds pretty accurate to me.
Man, if you're not predicting a win, that surprises me. That does. I'm not going to lie to you. That surprises me a little bit. 2-2. If it's not 2-1, I think it's 2-1 Charlotte FC. Let me put it that way, right?
Yeah.
Let me caveat it a little bit and say, I think Charlotte FC can win 2-1 in this match. It's just about whether they can keep Orlando off the score sheet. Christian Kalina, potentially the MLS goalkeeper of the year, right? That voting, he's a finalist in that category.
Yeah.
Maybe he shows up and says, no, I'm going to go for a clean sheet. This team has hung its hat, remember, on clean sheets. I just think that a Friday night, a rowdy atmosphere, I just feel like there could be goals out there.
Right. And if Charlotte FC is going to push four goals like we want them to from the very opening whistle and opening kickoff and play front foot, we might expose ourselves to the back a little bit. And I think it's like everyone loves a clean sheet. Obviously, if you don't concede, you can't lose, at least not in regulation. Not in this format, you still can't go on to lose in PKs. But I don't think we should worry too much. I think the goal should be to outscore them, whether it's 3-2, 3-1, 2-1, 2-2 in PKs, whatever happens. Like, the goal from the very opening whistle should be go out there and outscore these guys. Don't worry so much about what, you know, trying to keep a clean sheet, because we've proven in every game we've played against them, we've not been able to keep a clean sheet. They're very potent. They score the most goal. I think they scored the most goals in the second half of the season. They're one of the best goal scoring teams overall in the East. So why get caught up in a fool's errand trying to do something that no one else can do when their defense is not that good? And we have guys who can score goals. Leal Abada can score goals. You know, it was a shame to just waste, you know, our potent offensive attacking, and now Pep Biel's not there. And it's like, we got to figure out exactly what formation, what sort of the word escapes me that I'm looking for, but what composition, how to compose that, that attacking form. But we have the guys who can do it, whether it's Vargas who comes in, whether it's even Tavares who scored goals, whether it's Patton and Carroll together. The goal has to be a mentality thing. I think you win this one with mentality, and to the point where I'll say it doesn't even really matter who starts in place of Pep Biel. It really doesn't, because it's going to be mentality that wins it, not personnel.
Charlotte Soccer Show. Dan Graham. Friday night. Maybe I'll see you pregame. I'm planning to go to Hot Fly pregame. Maybe I'll see you there.
I have the day. I'm not going to the office on Friday. I've got a couple appointments early in the morning, and then I am all party mode. I'm going to be partying from the early afternoon on Friday, and it's going to be a hell of a day. I'm going to be pretty toasty by the time we get this thing kicked off, and going to be having a lot of fun singing, oh, F you, Orlando. Whether we're ahead or behind, I'll be singing it.
Enjoy the match, everybody. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this episode of Charlotte Soccer Show. Obviously, a huge match enjoy it. It's supposed to be fun, a chance for Charlotte FC to actually win a playoff match. I'm excited about that. And I'm excited to see you on Friday, Danny. And as always,
for the playoffs, baby.